Hey folks, Josh Armour here, host of WRA and producer here at the Wrestle Radio Australia Network. Get ready for a great episode of the Axecast. I've heard the interview with Dan Edler and it's a beauty. But before we go any further, just want to let you know that there will be no WRA this week and I'll be back into it next Wednesday. But before we go any further, I just want to let you guys know about WrestleMerch Printing. If you don't know about them already, they're great supporters of this very podcast network. So if you're a wrestler or a promoter out there and you need great merchandise at an awesome price, check out WrestleMerch Printing on Facebook. They're a great South Australian company. All of their tees are hand screen printed, so you are going to get the absolute best quality to your fans. Even if you just need a new logo, like we did here at Wrestle Radio Australia Network, they've got you sorted. And folks like Damian Slater, Adam Brooks, MCW champion Elliot Sexton, and promotions such as EPW Perth and MCW in Melbourne, trust WrestleMerch Printing. For further details and a quote, hit up WrestleMerch Printing on Facebook. Send them a private message and let them know the work you need done, and you'll be sure to get a quote very promptly. Be sure to tell them that you heard all about it here on Wrestle Radio Australia and the Axecast. Big thank you to Wrestle Merch Printing for supporting not only this network, but also Wrestling Down Under. And if you or your business would like to sponsor Wrestle Radio Australia and advertise here on the network, do the same with us. Hit us up on Facebook, send Wrestle Radio Australia a private message, and we'll get back to you quickly. Cheers. Now enjoy the Axecast with Josh Shooter.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuning into another grand episode of the Axecast with your host, Josh the Axe Shooter. I have to quickly thank Right After Midnight for that sweet music introduction and outro that you were listening to. I had nothing but good feedback and happy customers and reviews from last week's episode that contained the London Riots, one of England's and the world's greatest tag teams, as they talked about their aspirations, stories on the road, quick endeavour to Spain, and where they see themselves going in the nearby future with Big Rob Lynch and one of my close friends, James JD Davis. Now, joining me this week on the show is none other than IPW UK's promoter, Dan Edler. Now, IPW is one of UK's strongest growing promotions as it's been around for the last 11 years, and I was lucky enough to be a part of their 11-year anniversary month where I took part of about 5-6 shows of theirs, including superstars such as Tommaso Ciampa, Sammy Smooth, D&D, all these amazing fine wrestlers that I got to step in the squared circle with. But of course, being a promoter is never easy, especially when you're dealing with different people from all walks of life. You're stressing about crowd attendance, you're stressing about advertisement, venues, location, accessibility to the public, and everything comes into play here. Now, Dan is not a full-time promoter like some people are in England, but he does have his whole heart into it. And that's what makes him one of the greater promoters out there, and he's willing to see where the boys are coming from and compromise with them to make sure that everyone is happy at the end of the day. Now, IPW UK currently has Jimmy Havoc as their champion, Sammy Smooth as their All England champion, and D&D as their tag team champions. And we do touch base and share a story about how Pac, also known as Adrian Neville, comes to be a part of PWG in England. It slowly breaks out into the American scene over there. So if it wasn't for IPW UK and Dan Edler heavily pushing for Pac, would he have been where he is now, or would have been a few more years delayed until he got into the spotlight where he currently is at NXT, throwing out the red arrow? Now, I've enjoyed expressing myself throughout the form of a podcast to really get more ears on me and to listen out to what I have to share with the world, including upcoming shows, including merchandise plugs, including some of my friends' stories and endeavors they've overcome, and I'm hoping everyone else is. And if you've really enjoyed it, do me a favor, go to Wrestle Radio Australia and give it a kind review, give it 5 stars, tell us your thoughts, tell us your feedback, tell us how much you've enjoyed the show, just so we can get more ears onto the product and more people can enjoy podcasts. are such as these. I mean, hey, if I've got another 5 fans that go to a show just because I've done this podcast, then essentially I'm doing my job here at the end of the day. And it's another therapeutically beneficial way of some of my friends to express themselves and vent with an audience to listen. Now, I won't let you guys wait up any longer, and here we go with the interview containing Dan Edler, IPW promoter. Enjoy. Some fan was selling DVDs the other day. I even commented.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
Yeah, and he sent me a price list, and they're all over price. He's like, I want £15 for RH DVDs. I'm like, I'm going to just buy it brand new.
Yeah.
And they've got, like, an archive section, and not even that, they've got a download now, where I can download old ones, and I can get it without waiting for it. But what happened is, because fans will buy anything as long as you interact with them, but I brought books, I brought old t-shirts, like WWF retro vintage shirts, like Buff Bagwell, Buff the Stuff, Slap Nuts, Jeff Jarrett, stuff like that. I brought all them, then I was selling them at shows, and obviously I brought like 20 pieces of merchandise for like $50 Australian, and then I was selling it, and I made it, walked away with like $250 at the end. So it's just funny little knick and knacks that like you wouldn't see, like a wrestling garage sale pretty much. So it was like the same thing with all the TNA merchandise you sell at the shows anyway.
Mate, exactly, fucking like, you know, just... We used to do, one of my wrestlers, Simmons, used to go around and he'd go to like car boot sales before shows and pick up like wrestling figures for like, you know, 50p or whatever, take them to a show, sell them for fiver, like, you know, 100% mark, like, was that 500,000% markup, whatever it is.
And that's the guy with the eBay store, yeah?
Yep, that's the one, yep.
No, so you got like DVDs that are what, like 10 years old, like since you started anyway, but
so
some?
So yeah, so I took I just gave all the masters for the for all of my old shows to our designer, editor.
That's Curtis.
It's
Derek.
He used to. No, Derek doesn't do it for me.
No,
it's Chris Brooks now. He does it for me.
Okay, because Derek does the designs for a Melbourne company.
All right,
and then he messaged me and he's like, "I used your same promo photo for a UK company." I was like, "Yeah."
He's a good guy, but like he's just a bit slow. So whereas Chris Brooks is like a lot speedier.
Yeah, an afternoon.
Both good quality in that. But I just my video editor Mark, I just gave him all the masters for the first 2 years of shows because we're going to put it all onto Pivot Share and do the IPW on demand thing. So
yeah, what everyone's doing these days, put it on demand.
Exactly,
so that way you get your name out there. Not only that, there's some fan like in Minneapolis, America, that's like, oh, I've heard of this and I've got money, let me pay $10 each month to like download it, etc.
Precisely. So we're going to do it for like, the plan is we do it for slightly cheaper than the other UK companies are doing now because we've got a lot more content than they do, but they've got a lot more, maybe like a lot more buzz currently because they've had months behind them with the Pivot Share stuff already, so they've already got the on demand going, so they've got people that are like where if we kind of go in a little bit lower to start, then I think that people like hopefully will be like, oh cool, like, and some of the names we've got on the old shows, like, you know, Pac
Steen,
like, is that Generico,
retired recently.
Morishima,
that's the one,
and like obviously all those plus like, you know, Evan Bourne before he was Evan Bourne, his first ever UK appearance was for us. Steen's first ever UK appearance was for us. Super Dragon's first ever appearance was for us.
Classic Ryan, Joey Ryan was on it.
Joey Ryan was supposed to be on that show, and Joey Ryan didn't have a passport, so Joey Ryan didn't come across. So
how did he figure I can get into a country, but just don't have a passport.
Mate, I might ask him this December when he comes across.
That's like the worst excuse ever.
Oh man, I literally said to him when I picked him up for a show he did for us last year, I was like, mate, this is literally 10 years and 2 months after when you were supposed to debut for me, and he'd forgotten. And I was like, yep, you're supposed to be on my first ever show. Super Dragon was like, yep, I'd love to come to the UK. Brilliant. Bring a friend with me. I was like, okay, it's my first show. Whatever, yeah, flights can't be that much. Obviously they were. So I said, yeah, cool, who do you want to bring? He's like, Joey Ryan. I'm like, cool, no problems. Then obviously a month before, or like 6 weeks before, go to book both their flights. And he's like, hold up, I'll get his passport details. Oh, he hasn't got a passport. Don't worry, I'll come on my own. And then obviously, like, Super Dragon's very, very introvert, very shy. So he obviously just wanted a friend to come along just to, like, you know, make him feel more comfortable about the surroundings. But ended up that Colt Cabana was on the show anyway, so he got to spend time with Colt and got to spend time with Rockstar Spud and stuff.
Name.
So
Colt, yeah.
Colt Cabana, yeah. Exactly. He's another one on shows. Rockstar Spud, like I just said there. Who else? Taiji Ishimori, Takeshi Rikio.
I did when I worked for Big Japan, there was Shin Ikishawa.
Oh, Ishikawa, yes.
Ishikawa?
Yes.
And he's like, oh, yeah, big fan of Nice Beginners.
Yep.
I watch a lot of England and wrestling. I've wrestled in England. I'm like, oh, really? Yeah, before. He dropped some names. Coming back, a few years after I did Big Japan, I just didn't recognise any of the names. Then I read one of the old programmes, and I was like, he's one of the BJW chaps. He's retired now, sadly, because I think he's got a missus and settled down, got a real life. But he was into his heavy metal music and he loved English wrestling. But he told me when he came over here, or someone told me when he came over here, he was like, okay, I can only drop kick, I can only body slam, just because that's the way he was brought up. Like, hey, I'm still green, I can only body slam, I can only drop kick. And then JD's like, nah, man, I want you to give me like top rope superplex and I want you to go all out. So he like had a ball over here doing all that stuff.
He came over, back in 2006 or 2007, or maybe both years, actually, but anyway, there was a house over here that Pro Wrestling Noah owned called the Noah House, funny enough, you know, makes sense. And they would send over two people every single month. So it would be an experienced wrestler like a Morishima or like a... I think Morishima and Yone came across together. That weren't close. Morishima came across, Morishima and Yone came across at the same time. Ippiota come across with someone as well, I think with Rikio.
For three months.
They come across and they do 1 month to 6 weeks, whatever. But Noah would pay for the flights for both the wrestlers. Noah would pay for the accommodation. And then you just gave them, like, a British wage. So it was fantastic because you're getting all these amazing Noah guys for just like, you know, for what is like, you know, now you'd be paying obviously the whole flight, you'd be paying like, you know, an import wage. But back in the day, yeah, they just wanted the guys to come across and get like experience over here. So we had, because the guy that was sorting all out at the time was Mark Sloan with A Merchandise. And so he would like literally just go and be like, Mark, who have we got this month? And he'd send me through two new promo pictures. They'd have names at the bottom, and I'd be like, cool, because I didn't know who they were at the time. Obviously, I do now. But I'd be like, cool, brilliant, fantastic. And I'd always feature the named guy strongly, like Takeshi, like Rikio, like Morishima, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
We'd always feature them strongly. And then we'd give the younger guy, we'd put him in the young, like, you know, a young boy match. Like, so we did once with Ippiota, we did John Ryan and Ippiota versus the Cartel. And, like, Cartel went over Ippiota and then blah, blah, blah. And we did, with Taiji Ishimori, we did Marty Scurll versus Ishimori, which was Marty's first ever import match. It was on an afternoon card in, like, September 2006, I think it was. And, so, yeah, I mean, Ishimori beat the shit out of him. Absolutely annihilated him. But he loved it, exactly. Yeah. And he always, like, whenever, you know, whenever he talks about me, he's like, oh, that Dan gave me that start, gave me that match against Ishimori, blah, blah. He always speaks well of me, which
so
is
even,
quite nice.
So even Seb will say, will speak highly of you in the sense of, like, he won't quote his match fee higher because he cut his teeth with you. Same thing with me. I'm cutting my teeth with you here before Progress, before any of these other ones. Like, I did the, you could say, straw feds. I did a couple of straw feds over here before I really got seen a little bit. And it's, obviously, it's quality over quantity because I don't want to get injured because I've got a job where I need my body.
Yeah.
Everything else like that. So that's why I prefer doing the IPWs. I prefer doing the bigger name promotions like Progress and et cetera, et cetera, down the line. So Seb's got the same mentality. That's why Seb wants to do ICW and he wants to travel around.
Yeah.
And he cut his teeth there so he can quote higher elsewhere. Yeah. But at the same time, he does want to do the same thing with you, and I think it's the same situation with Grado even.
Yeah, it is, yeah. I know he says that, like, Grado always calls me cheap, calls me tight. It's like, he says that, like, he works for me for the cheapest of any other promoter still, which is, like, you know, obviously from a business perspective, it's fantastic for me. I'd love to give him more. I'd love to give everyone more money than you can, but obviously have to work to a budget, because if I was to give everyone double, then there wouldn't be a second show to come back for, so it's pointless. But,
That for the last show.
Or especially if we book a ring that just disintegrates and turns to sawdust. But anyway, thanks, Bill Bow. So with Grado and stuff, like, you know, like, what I kind of pride myself on is using, is getting people in at the right time that's early enough so that I kind of, I'm able to do stuff with them, not first, but, like, you know, able to do stuff and
you
put
the potential. You
yeah, exactly.
The potential, it's like, you've had that gift.
You look at, like Pac, for example. So, brilliant story about Pac. And it's like, it just shows the kind of, not the luck, but like the timing that you need to for things to work out perfectly. So, 2003, leading up to my very first show, 2004, leading up to my very first show, group in Newcastle, I think in Gateshead, called IWF. I was chatting to them about shows and about what I was doing and stuff. And they were like, look, we've got a team of guys, about 15, 20 guys. Would you like any of them to come down? I said, I'll be honest with you, I've never seen any of your guys' work. Send me a video. So I got VHS. I was at university. Got a VHS sent down. So one night, not playing poker.
That's
got
to be predetermined, though. If they're sending, a VHS, instead of, here's a YouTube link and a promo photo, I'm going to send over Facebook.
Exactly.
It's not going to be as high resolution, because it's on Facebook, but let me do that. Now, me, with my promo photos, I'll always send them on email, just because when I send them over on Facebook, it doesn't really pop out vascularity and everything else. Yeah. I need this to look appealing, so I'm going to email it. So...
But then this is this is 2000, 11, 12 years ago. So VHS was the one at the time. So anyway, so they sent me down a VHS, and it had maybe 7 or 8 matches on it, but not from the same show, from different shows. And a lot of them featured one guy called Assassin, who was 6'4", big guy, moved quite quickly. I don't think it's harsh to say that a lot of the IWF guys weren't very good, or didn't really look like wrestlers, but that's not me being harsh on them. They didn't really treat it like
a business.
And it was pre, if it was now, maybe they'd the setup for them would be slightly different. But anyway, Pac was one of the guys. So anyway, done this thing, watched a match, and he was on there, and it was a short match, and I was like, well, this guy is clearly quite good. So anyway, go back to him. I said, yep, cool, okay, do me a favor, put 4 guys in a car, make sure one of them's Assassin, and then we'll come down and we'll do that. So, Assassin, Jed Masters, Sean Avery, and one other came down from IWF and did my show. The other one wasn't Pac. Anyway, fast forward maybe 18 months, and I was living in Portsmouth, at university in Portsmouth at the time, run about a year's worth of shows, and I was going to, every month on a Friday night, FW Academy would run a Portsmouth Academy show. Varying attendances between 10 and 15. They weren't tremendously attended, but it obviously was just matches for the guys, which was the point of it. It wasn't, to make thousands of pounds off. So I go down there, and they obviously had one of their week-long camps, which is where PJ Black was initially trained, which is where Drew Galloway credits a lot of his training for. Pac went down and did a training camp, and obviously he's worked on the week. End of the week, he's done a match on the FWA card, and I clocked that it was him. So I spoke to him afterwards, said, look, it's great that you've come and done this. He's taken the time to go down from Newcastle all the way to Portsmouth, train for a week in Portsmouth, got a match. I've happened to see him. I said, look, got a show next month. Already announced the main event. It's Martin Stone versus Leroy Kincaid. I want to throw you in there as well. Debut you right at the top, boom, immediate impact. Threw him in, obviously, did that. Then we went on to do loads of matches with him throughout the course of the year up until September. We put him on every single show, and we were running monthly shows at this point. Put him on every single show, boom, 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 did matches against great guys. Got to September, and it's the 3rd anniversary show. And obviously, people we want to feature quite heavily at that point. We've got a big storyline with Andy Simmons, and I want to feature Pac quite heavily. So we brought over Kevin Steen, brought over El Generico, we brought over Ricky Marvin, and we brought over Ultimo Dragon. And we did a thing that I called the Global Gauntlet, which was, I believe, Pac, Marvin, Steen, and Ultimo Dragon, or Generico, one of the two. And then the other one did a singles match with someone else. So it's 4 people, 4 different continents, because it was Japan, Mexico, Canada, and England, Global Gauntlet match. During the point of the Global Gauntlet match, I'm pretty sure it was with Generico, actually. Pac and Generico did a bit, blah, 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 blah. Next day, it was supposed to be Generico versus Steen in a singles. They said, is there any chance we can get Pac added to our match? I was like, yeah, sure, if you want, no problems.
Give him a rub.
Exactly. They're like, this guy's good. I want to wrestle him. It's fine. So anyway, the next night, I think this is correct.
Those guys are never going to go anywhere. Just throwing that.
Yeah, those guys. Look, those Canadian guys. God, the fat one and the one with the mask. Jesus.
Yeah. But anyway. The one with the mask died on his way back home to his home planet.
To Mexico. Exactly.
Yeah.
And Kevin and, I'm about to call him by his real name, Kevin and Generico were great. Great guys, and they come and did a couple of tours for us and stuff. They were great over here, but I'll be honest, I never thought that they'd actually get signed, but it's so amazing they have. It's not from ability, I never thought.
Same thing for the Danielson. He's 5'4" or something, I mean.
Yeah,
seriously, a shoot 5'5".
And he, there's people you see and you're like, oh, this guy's gonna get signed. I thought that we'd have Generico and Steen for a lot longer than we did, so I should have used them probably more in the latter days when they were indies, but anyway, I digress. So going back to the pack story, I'm very good at going off tangent. So going back to pack story, so they asked, can we work him the next day? I'm like, yeah, sure. So we popped him in there. I think we did a gimmick where the winner of that match then went on to face Martin Stone in the main, I think, for the title or something along those lines. But we popped him in that. They wrestled him the next day, and Generico was like, this kid's great, you have to wrestle him the next day to Steam. Steam wrestled him the next day. This kid is great, he's going to be massive. Go straight to Super Dragon. Super Dragon. PWG run in October, you have to bring him out to PWG, like, next month. And, and obviously, at that point, they're really good friends with Super Dragon, like, they've got his ear kind of thing. Bring him over, you trust us, like, you know, you won't regret it. Cool. So the very next month, straight after that, goes and wrestles PWG. Fantastic. They begin to bring it back as often as they can, as often as their budget allows. I think it was an all-star weekend or one of their big, like, you know, weekend things. They brought a load of Dragon Gate guys over, including Seema. And obviously, Pac works the weekend. Seema looks at him and says, oh, I think you're quite good, blah, blah. I think he ends up working Seema either that weekend or the weekend or the next time they're both in the States. And Seema goes, right, you're coming to Japan. So then takes him to Japan. Obviously, the amount of time he spends in Japan is how WWE saw him. And so then he goes from Japan after, you know, 5-6 years doing that, whatever, eventually goes to WWE. He knew from the start that he was going to go there, but I believe he rejected an offer or two on the way. As far as I don't know if this is
just not feeling that.
I don't know if this is just someone else telling me a story and it becoming third-hand information, or if it was him telling me, but I can't remember. But I believe that's the case. I may be just absolutely completely wrong there, but I know that he always felt like he would go there. So with him, he was always in good shape, but he just got obviously in, like, better and better and better condition and stuff. And now he's obviously the muscle beast he is on TV now.
Doing flips.
Exactly. Still doing all the stuff he was doing before, but doing it better now than he was before. Because obviously, you know, he's got, like, you know, best people in the world around him to fine tune him and stuff. But what's funny is, you know, say for example, maybe say I didn't go to that show on that Friday night. Not saying that I'm the key in the cog that means that he's got signed by WWE, but say I didn't go to that show at night, or say that
you didn't you were the person that invested and put the faith into him going with the internationals, or you had the faith to say yes to Steen that night, where you could have said, no, it's going to be a great show, the fans want to see a good match, and I know you and Generico can deliver a good match, I'm not going to risk it
with the third person.
Yeah, I'm not going to risk my main event with the third person.
Just say for example that Super Dragon said, nah, sorry, we're full next month, it's cool, we don't need him. And then say for example he does that, and say PWG run the October and then don't run until January, February next year, that's 5-6 months later. Maybe people forgotten about him, like, you know, cool, he's a kid from England, but, like, you know, oh, there's a good guy just down in SoCal that's a little bit closer, maybe we use him instead. Like, you know, say Super Dragon says no there, say at any point in this story that, like, you know, say for example he's just sat in Gateshead, like, playing on the PS1 at the time or whatever, playing on, you know, N64, whatever he's doing, and goes, you know, it is about a 9-hour drive or a 7-hour drive or whatever down to Portsmouth. Oh, I'm going to have to sleep in the ring all week as well. And I, you know, I can't afford a B&B really. And this, that, and I don't fancy it. If he'd have just gone and done that, which would, you know, to be fair, it's entirely fair. You know, I'm, you know, you'd have to do a lot to get me to do a 7-hour drive anywhere for anything, to be honest. But, you know, I'm obviously got nowhere near the motivation of him. But, if he'd have decided he just didn't fancy it, like, for whatever reason, then
he may not be where he's
exactly.
Like, but then, you know, speaking of John Moss, last time I came up here, I did a week with John Moss. I'm like, okay, John, so what do you have odd numbers? I mean, the training's great, facility's great, everything else, great location. Cumbria, Whitehavens is a lovely little town. And he's like, people message him and they say, oh, John, would like to train with you one day, blah, blah. Blowing smoke, saying how good he is. And he's like, well, that's great. Where do you live? And they say Manchester. And he's like, well, apparently it's like a 2.5-hour drive. That's what he says from memory. Yep. What's stopping you from driving up in the morning, doing a session, driving back that night? There's nothing stopping you from doing 5 hours driving the same day. You're relaxing, your body's destroyed, so throughout the drive on the way back you can rest up. And then he looks at me, someone that's caught the coach and got lost on the way, 9 hours there, stayed a week, 9 hours back. I ended up losing my bag at one of the truck stops, so I had to go back, and, like, it was a long story. But long story short, like, some people just won't do that extra half an hour, and I'm sure you have your IPW trainings on Sundays, and some people throw the travel excuse out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, like, so I'll get people, like, I had a kid email me the other day, I assume he's a kid, like, you know, just an email, but saying, oh, hi, yeah, I see you're doing a show in Chatham, you're doing training before the show. I'm like, yeah, it's open training session, lasts 4 hours, this is the cost, come along, it's a bit more for your first session, because if I know someone's going to come along for a session who is doing their first session, I make sure there's a second trainer there so that they've got someone who can specifically go through the get the basics.
Yeah, not
so
only,
it's not slowing down the
rest
of the class.
Not only that, if you tell someone, okay, you want this T-shirt, it's $5. Okay, cool. You pay $5 or £5, whatever it is. If you tell someone this T-shirt's £50, they're going to second think it. They're going to, I don't know, do I really want this shirt, everything else? Same thing with wrestling training. Like, they're going to do the same thing.
Yeah, and like, you know, if they want to pay the extra money, they really want it, good, we want them. So he says, yeah, so he says, and bearing in mind, Chatham is a town, I won't say a nice town, it's alright. Chatham's a town in Kent, just next to, it's on the Medway, just next to Gillingham. He says, I live in Gillingham. He said, okay, so yep, so we've got the training in Chatham, starts at this time, cool. Can you let me know when you do one in Gillingham? So, well, we don't have any plans to do it in Gillingham because we don't run shows there, and there's no need to run training there because we run training in Swanley, which again, only 25 minutes away, blah, blah.
On the train.
25 minutes on train, yeah, or by car. And he says, oh, okay, no, not to worry, just drop me an email as soon as you do one in Gillingham. I'm like, it is literally a 5-minute drive from Chatham to Gillingham. From middle of Chatham to middle of Gillingham, it's literally a 5-minute drive, and you can't even do that. It's like, all the best.
Okay, let's say this guy's a kid, and he doesn't drive, it's trained right away. But at the same time, why would an independent company cater around him?
Yep. This is one of the main reasons that I upped the minimum training age from 14 or 13 or whatever we did before to 16, because...
That's a UK thing, isn't it? Like, yeah, training at, like, 13?
Yeah, 14. I know, yeah. A lot of other companies do allow it. Like, I know WAW do juniors training, where, like, people, like, kids age 6, 7, 8 or whatever are training, and they do junior shows, and these kids are doing, you know, putting on matches age, you know, 7, 8, 9. So, you know, and obviously you look at all the, like, the Knights and stuff and, like, Paige and that, they all started extremely young. So... we've always been open to doing it, like, you know, of younger age. Obviously, there's legal, like, you know, loopholes you need to go through in order to do that with, like, CRB checks and stuff. But, and so, you know, upping the legal age to 16, I mean, there's a lot less, like, hassle. But I wasn't even for that reason. Like, I don't mind going through the hassle, and obviously it's a lot more money for me if I accept people that are under 16, because there's a bigger catchment area. But if you just accept 16 and above, well, then at least, you know, you should be getting people that, you know, if you're saying, right, well, training's actually 25 minutes further this week. Age 16 and above, like, if you know, whether it's through parental, like, you know, transportation, or whether it's through, like, doing it on your own. We have a trainee that lives in Ealing, on the north side of London. And it takes I think the other day we did a show in Snodland, which is in deeper Kent. It took her 2.5 hours, and it was 4 trains, I think. And she's 15, 16. She started training with us before we upped the age. I think she's 15 at the moment. And she did that. And it's like, you know, you're like 15-year-old, like, quite new to training. So it's not like she's wrestling on shows yet. So she's not got... it's not like she's got the motivation of, like, oh, I just had my first match. Like, I want to make sure I get the second one. She's not at the point yet. She's not got ring gear. There's nothing like that. But there's the dedication there versus this guy who, you know... I'd like to assume he was 16 or above, because it does say pretty clearly on the website that's the age of training. So you're going to assume the kid's 16 or above and can't do a 5-minute journey from, you know, from Chatham to, from Gillingham to Chatham. I mean, you know, if you can't do that, then he definitely wouldn't have done the 30-minute journey up to Swanley every week. So it would have just been a complete waste of 30 quid or whatever to do a training session. It would have been a waste of his time, it would have been a waste of our time, like... where's the point?
Yeah, I've helped out with seminars before, and they've charged maybe $50 for a seminar, but then you have fans that come in, and then they end up, like, taking their first bumps and taking their first body slams, but then you have people that want to do the seminar to learn, they're asking questions, but then you have to try and protect the business because there's fans around, and just you got to draw that fine line of that money gets bumped up. Some people say, oh, some wrestling schools just take people's monies. And at the same time, like, you've heard stories when wrestling trainers will put their name on a school, but they won't actually be there, stuff like that, and they'll charge, I don't know, $5,000 or something crazy. Yeah. That's understandable. But if it's decent training and if it's worth the cost of money, maybe you're going to get your money's worth and you want to try and get your money's worth. Yeah. Like, this girl that's making a trip back and forth, like, she's going to get her money's worth. I'm sure she's not going to pay for entry, but she's going to see this show. She's going to observe it.
Yeah.
She's going to see what goes wrong and learn from that, learn from other people's mistakes.
This is it. I mean, I include the... whenever we do a show day training, obviously it's in-ring. Like, a lot of our sessions are matted. A lot of our sessions are matted because we don't own our own ring. We rent in. There's nowhere to really... like, I heard someone say the other day about Progress in London, the reason they don't own their ring. There's nowhere to store it. Like, they have a ring for training for their full-time facility, but we don't have a space at our part-time facility to store a ring. as it currently stands. So there's nowhere for us to store it. It's not economically viable at the moment. So we do a lot of matted sessions, and our in-ring sessions are on show days. So I make sure that the training cost includes entry to the show as a part of the training. It costs a little bit more because obviously we're doing it show days. Generally speaking, the show day trainers are guest trainers as opposed to our regular trainers, who will maybe, depending on who they are, maybe be a touch more expensive to get to do a training session.
Like, perfect example, this Saturday.
Yep, Tommaso Ciampa, yeah. So he's slightly more expensive to get to do a training session. He's got, I actually offered him to do the whole weekend. He said he much prefers doing like a nice 3-hour session, goes through things. So he's obviously got a session in mind that he particularly wants to do. Bringing him in to do that particular session, because that is like, you know, that's what we've got this weekend. So we've got that on the first day, and the second day we've got a high flying session with Jody Fleisch. The week after we've got a session with Bobby Lashley, which is obviously going to be surrounded around conditioning and kind of like what we're going to ask of him is for how MMA can pass back into wrestling and back and forth, because obviously at the moment he's got a 9-2 record. Or is it 13-2? I think a 13-2 record in MMA, competing for Bellator and doing TNA at the same time. I think that's it's a very distinct session. It's very different that he can actually give. And then the day after that, we have a training session with Juventud Guerra, which obviously isn't a Mexican lucha style session. So four completely different sessions in the space of 2 weeks. And then once that's finished, they go back and they do a grading, and they go back into their regular training with the British style trainers like James Davis, like John Windsor, who are two people that came through the school themselves. They both started training with us 9 years ago, 9 years, 7 years respectively, I think.
And when people are coming up through their training, they look at people and maybe a guy's taller and lankier, and he's like, oh, well, I look up to Kane, and Kane, I want to do his choke slams. Or there's a little guy that maybe does backflips on his trampoline, or maybe he done a little yard wrestling, and he wants to be a flippy guy, then he's more appealed to Juventud's style. So he's going to ask him, hey, what can I do here?
Exactly.
What can I do to stand out? I'm a little guy. What should I be doing when I work with a bigger guy? Stuff like that.
I mean, we did a session with Jigsaw, actually, when he came across back in, I believe, April. February. So he came across there, and we did a session with him. And I said to a couple of trainees the other day, I said, what was your favourite training session that we've done with, guest trainers? Just to get, because obviously, at the end of every session, they bloody well best be polite and say, thank you for the session, really enjoyed it, and so on and so forth. But after a span of time, if he was to say, give me your best one or two, I'm not saying give me your worst one or two, because, no one needs to be buried, but give me your best one or two, what do you think? And his session came up, because it was very lucha-based, there was lots of different stuff that obviously isn't taught by a British trainer, because, a British trainer doesn't have that skill set. But there was lots of things that he was able to bring to the table in that session that they really liked, which is why I think if we do get this Juventud session, whether it be next week or whether it be later in the year, I think they'll like that, because again, he's going to bring something slightly different, which is why we're doing that, why we're doing a Will Ospreay session, why we're doing a Jody Fleisch session. It's all different to what they're getting currently, and it opens up the door. For example, if we'd have ever managed to get a session with Pac, that's obviously going to be a very, very different session to Johnny Saint, for example, who we've had to come and do sessions before. So you're going to get a lot of different styles. And then eventually what will happen is someone will find something they want to run with. You look at James Davis, for example. He's now won the London Riots. He's got that style. He's a great brawler. However, obviously, he went through a period of time where he was learning all the technical basics and stuff of wrestling.
He loves it.
He loves it. And he's a big fan of British wrestling. He's a big studier of British wrestling. So he's got all that in his locker for when he needs it. But he knows that at the moment, what is required of him is the brawling and the brawling side of it, and being the right riots, mentally riots, you know what I'm saying? So obviously it's good that we can offer all these different sort of strands of where people the things that they can take
and what they want to follow.
Exactly. And then they can say, for example, they do all these four sessions over the next 2 weeks, and they go away and they think, right, well, this is what Bobby Lashley pushed me to do this, which will help me with this, which is great. And then here's a good example. We did a session with Fergal Devitt, so Finn Balor, and he did a lot of what he was saying was that his conditioning is based on not making himself look big and muscly and huge and this and that and the other, but a lot of his regular gym work is on stuff that he's going to use in wrestling. So say, for example, you're going to lift someone up on your shoulders. Right. Well, then what muscles do you need to be working most often to get the most mobility to be able to lift the heaviest person? So you can do that. And if you're going to be doing a lot of stuff out of the corner, or going up to the top rope, or doing anything that, match in these match situations, what's going to be the best workout for you to get your body to do the things you want to do when you're wrestling.
Short sprints, because going off the ropes, it's very explosive back and forth. Yes, no, everything else. When you want to get up and get down, you want to be doing burpees, squats. You want to have strong core for when you hold a guy, so you're not going to fall. So when he picks you up, so you can keep your back straight, so then you don't bend your back, break your neck, everything else. So you're going to have a strong lower back, so you're going to do some deadlifts. So you want to work your body to your strengths. Now, with that being said, people work their own style in by seeing all these guest trainers, and then you, being the booker man as well, you also see what appeals. So maybe you go, all right, London Rides, they're brawlers, I'm going to put them with wrestler A and B, and they work that fast-paced style, and the brawlers can really work well and mesh in together, and the brawlers can really just beat down on these guys, and the little guys can come up and do their little flips, as they do.
Yep.
So you can see what people do and who would work well with each other. Yeah. You know Will Ospreay is a high flyer. Will Ospreay is not going to hit a powerbomb anytime soon. So with that being said, you're like, okay, well, who's a big guy that would mesh well with Will Ospreay? So Will could easily enough hit his high-flying stuff, and this powerful guy can just throw him around.
Exactly. It just actually, because obviously you mentioned Johnny Moss earlier, now mentioning Will Ospreay. Obviously, that's linked in my head as a match that would be pretty cool to see because, like, you know, I don't imagine that's probably ever happened because Johnny doesn't get down here that much and Will maybe doesn't get as much up north as he should. So, I don't know why, but just, you know, just thinking that now, that'd be quite an interesting match that someone could probably put on if they're thinking about it. But, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you can spot. As well, what's nice about, like, I try and go to every single training session. I'm never, ever going to be a trainer. I actually did take one training session once when someone didn't show up. It was a Friday night back in 2005, and God knows no one got anything out of it, but I'm sure it was fun. But, yeah, I'm never going to be training anybody, that's for damn sure. But, obviously, I like to be at the sessions to see the progression of the people through what they're learning from our regular trainers. And it's very, like, it's obviously, every single week they're going to be doing something different in training when it comes to doing the match at the end or doing the, you know, the drills during the actual training. So I can see what they're good at and what, you know, where we pick them up and where we go. I mean, for example, there's a guy who wrestles for us called Smooth Sammy Smooth. And we knew that he was coming through really, really quickly. He was going to be coming up to doing his debut and stuff. And we wasn't really sure exactly, like, you know, he's doing different things at training and some stuff makes sense, some stuff doesn't. And at that time he didn't have a ring name, he wasn't ready. Ended up, like, completely by chance. This is obviously, this is through a product of the team building that we get at training, that there was a weekend of training, I think with Johnny Saint and Marty Jones, if I'm correct, or it might have been with Super Crazy, but anyway, we did a weekend of training, and it was two shows, two trainings, 2 days. He lives quite far away, another guy drives 3 hours every Sunday, come and do training, lives quite far away, said, is there anywhere that I can crash overnight? So that we could, that's what it was with Zack Sabre Jr., that's who it was with. Is there any way we can crash overnight, so that I don't have to drive 3 hours back to come back down? And obviously, everyone's saying, yep, no problem, Sam, like, come, stay here. However, we are going to go for a little drink tonight somewhere, like team building drink. On the night out, his character comes out, and so we see a bit more of him as a person, so we're able to then take that. Next training session the next day, completely different to his first training session. So first training session on day one with Zack would have been lots of conditioning, lots of bridges, lots of lunges, lots of squats, lots of, you know, all the stuff that, like, you know, Zack does when he does in Japan. The second day, well, now we know a bit more about his character and a bit more about him as a person, we can pull a couple of those strings out and start creating a character that works for him. And obviously, you see him on a night out, he's a very smooth man, like, you know, generally speaking. He's not called Smooth Sammy Smooth for no reason. So we were able to take that character stuff from him, put it into the training session the next day, and suddenly it's the same trainer, but he's getting two completely different sessions out of it because we're working to his strengths. And, like, you know, I know that I've just taken a story about a night out and turned it into how we're doing strengths.
But at the same time, people learn the most when they're on the road, when they're in cars, and now everyone flies. Well, at least people in Australia fly just because it's so spread out and it's a much bigger country than England. You don't have that experience, that road trip stigma that you build and the connection you have with people. You have stories from that. The car breaks down. Maybe you get into a fight with a guy at the petrol station or whatever else. There's stories you tell people. There are ribs you do on the road also. You hide someone's boot. You take someone's boot lace. You mess with their food, their drinks, something like that. Yeah. And there, when the funny stories come about, that's what you can tell other people, get a good laugh.
I've got a really good example of how a car journey can really mould, like, where you're going to go with your wrestling career and so on and so forth. So, it's, I believe, the January of 2006. We're running monthly shows in the Orpington Halls in Orpington. At that point in time, we've got Andy Boy Simmons, who is being positioned as one of the top baby faces. We've got Johnny Storm, who's just turned and is positioned as one of the top heels in a faction alongside people that you may know now as Martin Stone and Dave Mastiff and another chap called Jack Storm. Anyway, so he's just been positioned in. So we've got top heel, top baby face, and winner of fate gets title shot a month after. So, going into the match, position, obviously Johnny is heel, but Johnny's quite a funny heel, quite funny, so he's quite entertaining. So the crowd, even though he's just turned and he's just done the big angle, the crowd are actually on his side. So Simmons is now getting booed, which is terrible for us, because this is like, you know, about to peak and go into the big title match against Martin Stone for the belt, blah, blah, blah. A big weekend for us, the month after. He gets booed. So on the way back down the car, we're all living in Portsmouth, I'm driving, we've got Andy Quilden, who was a referee for us at the time, and a booker, and obviously Andy Simmons. And he's saying, well, why is that happening? I don't understand why it's happening. I said, well, you know, maybe it's just because you're wrestling Johnny. And he said, no, I've been feeling it for a couple of months now. I don't think we're going in the right direction with this. How's about we do this instead? Literally, hour and a half car journey, completely wrote out everything we're going to do with him from February through to September. On the Monday, he's calling me, he's making more changes, we're adding stuff to it, boom, boom, boom. All because we're back in that car. If I was living in Newcastle, for example, and I was going home with Pack instead, then that conversation never would have happened. We never would have done that. And then the month after was actually when PWG came and debuted in England. We did a doubleheader. The first night, we did Martin Stone versus Andy Simmons, exactly as we planned, with Stone supposed to be the heel, Simmons a big babyface. Same thing happens, Stone gets cheered, Simmons gets booed. Big angle afterwards where it goes off on all the fans. Similarly to how Bret Hart with Canada and England, in that he went off at all the adults in the crowd, but then was still baby-facing up the kids. So the kids were still cheering him, because they were cheering him anyway. But all the adults in the crowd, obviously, like the quote-unquote smart fans, were booing him now. So perfect, that's exactly what we want. The very next day, we got him onto the PWG show. He wasn't supposed to be on it, but we said it makes sense. Look, we spoke to PWG and said, look, local guy, just turned last night, going to get great heat. Did him versus Frankie Kazarian, and there was 350 people packed into the Orpington Halls for that PWG debut. Sold out 2 months in advance. 350 people that maybe half of them wouldn't have known who he was. Football star chanting to the point that, like, you know, if there was a noise limiter on that building, we'd have been shut down because it was so loud. And it worked so perfectly. And we ran with that for a good 2 years before it finally ran out of steam. But again, like I said earlier with the Pack thing, if he didn't get up and go down to Portsmouth, it wouldn't have, you know, he wouldn't have, maybe he won't be where he is now. If I didn't get in that car with Simmons, then, God, we may have actually gone through with him trying to win the title as a babyface, and that would have been some sort of abortion, but, you know.
Yeah, like the same thing happened when I had my debut match for a company called MCW. That's when I got the nickname The Axe. But then I also did a road trip straight after, we had to leave straight after, we didn't even watch the rest of the show, like, we were the pre-show match or whatever else, so as doors were opening, people having their food, we were the match, we left straight away, didn't watch the rest of the show, shake hands, everything else, in the car, drive to Adelaide, 8 hours there, we did 3 shows Saturday, 3 shows Sunday, drove back that night, back in time for work on Monday. Now, that being said, if I was like, you know what, we've got a long drive, let's not do it, everything else, maybe I wouldn't have put my foot in the door, I wouldn't have shaken the right hands, I wouldn't have got that nickname and everything else, and I wouldn't have had the success I did with that name later on down the track or nothing else, because I was like, I'm lazy, I can't be stuffed. That person that didn't want to travel that extra 20 minutes on a train, he could have actually made some money from wrestling, he could have enjoyed it, he could have found who his personality is, came out of his shell a little bit more, if he wanted to. Now, with that being said, you've used myself, you used Tony Storm, 2 Australians. You haven't used any Australians in the past?
Nope, not to my knowledge.
Easy.
First day.
Your thoughts, perceptions, opinions on Australian wrestling?
So, I have heard, obviously, of the couple of the companies you've mentioned, both in your first trip and now your second trip. I'll be honest, I probably hadn't heard of a lot of Australians or people from the Australasia kind of area prior, apart from people that maybe been over here and had done a little bit here and there, but again, it's quite few and far between. Hadn't heard of a lot. But, like, if they're all of the quality of yourself and Tony, then, you know, the more the merrier, like, you know, as many as Australians want to come across to, you know, let's start a division, like, you know. But, yeah, obviously, like, Tony was fantastic. You've got, like, your debut went really well. It's good. You've got Tommaso this weekend, so, you know, fingers crossed for you for that one. And, you know, so if we can keep that up, and yeah, you're representing your scene very well. So, like, fingers crossed when you go back.
Easy. Now, September, busiest month.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to do how many shows?
Six.
Six shows in, what, 4 weeks?
4 weeks.
Why?
I probably had some sort of death wish. I don't know. I mean, like, there's promotions that obviously will do a lot more than that, and it will be their fault. I mean, it's not my full-time living, so I am doing this while splitting it with other things. Basically, it's our 11th anniversary, and I've noticed that we did a couple of tours back in, the, like, 2008 or so, where we'd run the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we'd do, boom, knock out a tour, blah, blah, blah. And it was quite fun, you know, we had guys like Al Snow on it, Magnus, Big Vito, people like that. Black Sabian, as one of our commentators once called him, like, obviously Black Jesus Sabian, just forgot his middle name, anyway. Guys like these, you know, we had all these guys on the show, did it good, like, off we go. I've seen recently that people are doing tours that maybe aren't involving midweek dates, they're just sort of like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, oh, boom, boom, boom. So I thought, okay, we'll give one of those a go, see what we can do, do it across September. September's always been, generally, touchwood, a decently drawing month for us, apart from one show back in 2006, I think. Anyway, it's always been a pretty decently drawing month, so I thought, you know, we'll give it a go then. It's 11th anniversary, we'll do the 11th anniversary tour, as opposed to the 11th anniversary show, like we've always done before. And we'll have, like, you know, open it with Snodland, sort of ease in, do the big tournaments in the middle of the month, and finish off with the big show, the tour finale at the end. Do that. And in the middle, we'll attempt to do a show in Spain, which ended up being one match, but anyway. So, yeah, I thought it'd be a really good idea, and I don't think I'll be doing it again, because it's a lot of pressure, and there's a lot going on at one time. I think maybe what I'm finding is that people are kind of picking and choosing the shows they want to go to, rather than normally they go to every single show. I'm seeing some people sort of pick and choose.
They've got enough variety to choose
from.
Yeah,
exactly. They know that if they missed two shows in Tunbridge this weekend, it's okay. There's two more shows next weekend for us. You know, it's fine. I mean, WXW, for example, in Germany, are doing 12 shows in September. But there's four guys running that, and they run full-time business. I'm one guy doing everything, and I have the same... I do two businesses. I have another business on the side. So it's a lot of effort, and it's there's things that I wish that I'd... had an assistant to kind of help me through that could have made this whole thing go a little bit more smoothly. And I wish we'd taken our ring to Spain. But apart from that, you know, it's you know, hopefully in 2 weeks' time, I think. 2 weeks' time would be Tuesday, won't it? Hopefully in 2 weeks' time, I'm sitting here smiling. You'll be back in Australia by then, but I'll be hopefully sitting here smiling, still with a house, still with a car, still with a promotion, and hopefully we'll have five banging shows to put online so people can see them and see what IPW is all about. Fingers crossed.
Easy. So wrestlers have goals they want to hit, or bucket list achievements. I've got Ribeiro pants. I want to go to Japan. I want to wrestle in England. I want to be able to be on the intro of Botchamania. I've achieved some of these. Some of these I still want to do. I still want to have a match at ROH. I still want to go to New York, get a photo of Times Square and everything else. As a promoter, do you have... things you want to do, like a bucket list of like people you want to have on your shows per se, or do you have goals as a promoter of, okay, I want to make this a full-time living, okay, I want to make X amount of profit? Do you have goals as a promoter or achievements you want to hit?
Yeah, I have. I think my main goal actually comes from the training school. Yes, I'd like for one of our guys to get signed. We've had people come through that have like done obviously international bookings and stuff, and they wrestled, you know, all around Europe and this, that, and the other. And some people have come through and like that we've had wrestle, like, for example, obviously we've had Daniel Bryan on our shows, we've had, you know, like Pac, for example, like that. People have come to us, wrestled for us prominently and then been signed, but they're not from our training school. I like someone to come in from scratch, go through our system, wrestle for us, and then get signed. We've got a few people now that have come through that do legitimately have a chance with that. We've got people that are young, that maybe in 8-10 years time, you know, when they're sort of 24, 26, maybe they'll be the people to get signed. I'm not in any rush for them to get signed, but there's people, you know, that could do. I'd like for one of them to do it. There's people that have come through our training school 6-7 years ago that are still wrestling around the country now, that maybe now it's their time or their time soon. You know, like your James Davises, like, you know, for example, Daryl Allen, people like that come through our school.
Now, Daryl Allen is now one of the head trainers at Progress, who teaches mostly the tech stuff. And then James Davis is obviously the guy that teaches a lot of the tech stuff on Thursdays. And then that rotates with Jimmy as well. Now, with that being said, who was the previous trainers at IPW, if that was the case?
So, originally, I came up with the idea, and I put it to Martin Stone that he'd come and do the training. And he was very much against the idea. I don't think he just felt that he really wanted to do it at that time. He's done a couple of sessions quite recently for us, actually, and they've been really good. But so, very, very first ever session, a few rubbish gym mats, a rubbish, terrible, terrible crash mat at our regular venue that wasn't a gym, that wasn't a, you know, purpose-built venue. It was a community centre. On a Sunday, just, you know, like, Martin Stone took the first session. A load of people that really shouldn't have been trying to do wrestling training that they had no, like, shape or form to do it. But also, Daryl Allen and James Davis were at the first ever session we did. So Martin Stone did a session. I think we were doing monthly sessions at that point, not weekly. He did the first one, didn't like it, didn't do another one ever again. So then at that point, I kind of sort of brought in a few guest trainers here and there who do bits and pieces. And after about, I'm assuming 9 months or so, we found that Andy Simmons was the one that kind of stuck the most and people wanted him to come back the most at the time. So he was our head trainer for, I will guesstimate, 3 years and 3 venues. Ignore the doorbell. Then we migrated across to do our training at our current venue, the White Oak Leisure Centre in Swanley, Kent. And we took on a different head trainer in Tom Chamberlain. It was supposed to be him and RJ Singh, but Tom had the more spare time because RJ was wrestling quite a lot and Tom wasn't. And so he took over for a few years. Then approximately 2 to 2.5 years ago now, I guess, James Davis took over as full-time coach. Again, it was supposed to be James Davis and Daryl Allen alternating, but because of Daryl's commitments with Progress, he obviously did a lot more stuff for Progress, which left James open to do the Sundays for us. And yeah, now I kind of consider now that James and John Wins are kind of like co-head coaches. They take all of the basic sessions every Sunday.
What if James needs someone to help show something or to help run drill with? At least he's got him there to back him up.
Exactly. I think John would maybe agree with this. James has probably got a bit more of the experience and he's probably got a few more things that he could show people over what John has. John's obviously very skilled. Maybe John is quite good at verbalising stuff and kind of explaining, kind of quite calmly, kind of what's gone wrong and how to fix it and so on and so forth. So they're both very, very good in their own ways, but both obviously very skilled and, like, you know, they understand the British style of wrestling, they understand the technical style of wrestling, and, like, they're very good at giving these new trainees a very solid base, so the basics are obviously very good.
With that being said, let's say hypothetically we get 1,000 people into IPW, right? You charge £10 a ticket. So, what, you made, what, $10,000, something like that? You sell another 1,000 videos online, right? With this Vimeo, with this video on demand that you're going to get up and running, you charge that at half the price. Mm-hmm. So you've made another $5,000.
Yep.
So obviously that's going to be where the money is. So then people around the world can purchase the ticket after the show's been done. And you've got merchandise and all that. And so where can this all be found anyway?
Right. So basically, we obviously, hopefully by the time the end of this month is cleared, we're going to have launched our on-demand service, which is going to be through PrivetShare, which is the one that is quite popular at the moment. It's the service that a lot of other promotions are using. We originally switched to on-demand back in, I'm going to say 2009, maybe even 2008, and we were pretty much the first people to do it. That's not even tooting my own horn. Because it wasn't my horn to toot, it was Andy Quilden that decided to do it. And he took us from DVD to on demand. It was too early, obviously. It completely killed our DVD market. We went from selling 15 DVDs a week to selling one a month. It completely shot it dead, and we also weren't even making any money off the on demand, because obviously in its infancy, it's quite expensive to produce, quite expensive to install, quite expensive to run. So we got there, but we got there a few years too early. We didn't stick it out because I wouldn't let it, because it was killing my DVD merchandise money. So we switched back to DVDs, and now is the time to do the on-demand. It's a lot more accepting from wrestling fans, especially because WWE Network, and obviously, you know, $9.99. Ours won't be $9.99, it'll be less.
People can just sit in bed, watch on-demand, via their laptop, via their TV screen, order a pizza, everything else. They don't even have to leave to buy the DVD. They don't have to wait for it in the mail. So it's just that convenience as well.
Exactly. And, I see a lot of stuff like shoot interviews of all the guys from the 90s, from the early noughties and stuff. They're all recording shoot interviews online. I want to watch them, and I'm able to watch like a 12-minute preview clip of this 3-hour interview, and they don't put it online. I think that's absolute, like, that's absolute lunacy to not want to put, I mean, you know, to not want to do something like that. That's the sort of like an impulse purchase. I'm hoping that people think the same of us. Like, they maybe have heard our name across a few years. They've thought about buying a DVD, but oh my god,
the trailer looks good enough.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, you know, but they've thought about buying a DVD, but like, you know, oh my god, it's DVD from UK. Will it work on our system? Like, oh, is it going to take a month to get here? Like,
we'll have to change the region.
Exactly. Do the UK actually speak English? Like, you know,
do England speak England?
This is it. Exactly. Do we speak England? You know, like all these like crazy things. Like, people have asked me some seriously crazy questions about our DVDs before, like, you know, like, are they DVDs? Well, no, they're pizzas, they're made of egg. Of course they're DVDs. But anyway, people ask some crazy questions, whereas if it's on demand, it's very clear. It's either, you know, £3.49 or whatever it is, or $6.19 or however it converts. It's, you know, you click it, you put your thing in, 2 minutes later you're watching our first ever show, you know.
Easy. Now, with that being said, you're on the Instagram. Mm-hmm. You're as what, IPWUK.
IPWUK on Instagram.
Twitter?
Twitter, we're IPWUK.
How many followers are you on?
Just hit 28,000, I think. So
only 28,000.
Getting up there, you know, trying to like, get to that magic 30,000 figure that I want to get
to. You're on Facebook as well?
Facebook, yep. Hashtag, so we're IPWUK on everything apart from YouTube, where we're Dan IPWUK, because for some unknown reason, yeah, I don't know why I called us Dan IPWK on there, but anyway.
There is an IPW in, like, Queensland, and then there is an IPW in New Zealand.
Yep.
I'm sure there's an IPW in America, because they've got every three adjectives there is. And I'm, funny enough, going to be heading over to IPW New Zealand sooner rather than later, so I can say I've wrestled for IPW twice.
Twice, this is it.
In two different countries.
Two continents, yeah.
Much like IPW Spain, right?
Exactly. Oh, God almighty. Mentally Bilbao.
Right. But, so we keep going on about that. So
and we've got the Snapchat as well, which is IPW_UK, which
IPW underscore
really
UK.
Pushing at the moment. We gained like another 100 followers this weekend in Spain, so I'm trying to push that.
So we'll quickly touch base about the Spain trip, right? So just for a fun story to end it on, what is what happened with Spain? Like, yourself, the riots, the geezers, which I rate very, very, very highly.
Yep.
Jimmy. And am I missing anyone? Grado
and D&D. So 8 of us went across there. We went across there originally for my birthday in May. Little scouting trip, Bilbao night out with a few of the Spanish guys. Got involved in the show. I don't really tend to get involved in shows, but I had to for this particular situation. So we went out, did a little angle at the end of the show where we put one of their main guys through their ring, which is ironic. And it went down really well. All the fans seemed to enjoy it. It was a sold-out venue. Fits about 220. It's a converted church into a nightclub. Really great venue. Like, you know, lighting, sound system, looks great. So we did that, all with the view of coming back for the 11th anniversary tour and doing Spain versus England, bringing out, you know... Oh, sorry, Spain versus UK, because obviously we had Grado there. And bringing out 8 of our top guys. Guy gets 8 of their guys. Booked the card miles in advance. Everybody, like, you know, no problems with the card whatsoever. Everybody had their passports, booked the flights, easy peasy, no problems whatsoever. Sailing through. Day of the show, we're all sold out, no more tickets left. Impossible to lose money on this show. I even said it to James Davison flat out there. Isn't it nice that I'm going to Spain and there's no worries to be had because it's impossible to lose money? That is, of course, if you manage to actually run the show. If your ring breaks during the first match, like, to the point that it disintegrates. There is no fixing this ring. Imagine on an icy lake, and you walk across the icy lake. Well, if the icy lake starts to crack and bits disappear, you can't put the ice back. This is the same thing with this ring. It was basically sawdust. And so this wonderful converted boxing ring, that, I mean, it felt like you were bumping on concrete anyway, has just disintegrated during the first match. It was Rob Lynch versus Red Eagle. I believe his name was. I looked to call him Red Dragon there.
Rob isn't a small guy.
Rob's not a small guy. It wasn't Rob. I mean, the ring was disintegrating on arm drags that, like, you know, Red Eagle was taking, and it's just, you know, it was just, it was a bit of a debacle. But anyway, yeah, so the ring disintegrated during the first match to the point that there were 6 holes in 2 different regions of the ring by the end of the first match. So obviously, we've looked at the ring. 2 poles have fallen out as well. If you've ever seen how the way a wrestling ring's constructed, it's a lot of metal and a lot of wood, and not a lot of give. And some of the poles had started falling out. So not only was the wood disappearing, but the poles disappearing as well. So we tried putting it back together. The ring guy, who also turned out to be our mascot for our opening segment, which was really confusing, but, you know, mainly Spanish. He went out and looked at the ring and come back and in as many Spanish words as he could, said it was F-C-U-K-E-D. And that we had no, there's nothing we could do. We came up with an idea of shortening the card from 6 matches to 4 matches, popping on 2 comedy matches where they would just work away from the holes of the ring, and then doing a big tag at the end that was false count anywhere that really didn't touch the ring at all. But it just wouldn't have been safe, like putting anyone in that ring, like, you know, an ankle could have gone, like, you know, anything could have happened, you know, you could have, like, you could have killed yourself. So it's just not safe. So between me and the co-promoter, Matt, the Spanish chap, well, he's English, but he lives in Spain, we decided not to go ahead with it. So,
but even Grado couldn't save the show, right?
This is it. Instead, the fans got 1 match, then they got 10 minutes of Ronan Keating from the Geezers, and about 90 seconds of
what
Grado.
What is Ronan Keating?
He is the lead singer of Boyzone, a Irish band back in the day. Many fantastic big boy band songs that they pumped out. And yeah, Tom and Sebastian knocked out a couple of Ronan Keating songs. Then they got their bum out and got hit around the head with a microphone. Before Grado came out to do his entrance, we did a big segment before the first match, and Grado got a great response, which is strange because I don't really think that any of them, I didn't expect any of them to know who
McDonald's
we were, or who anybody was.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of, like, from our actual people that were coming across and on the show, I didn't expect them to know the wrestlers. But Grado got a good pop. You know, good reaction from the crowd. This is prior to his music playing at all, just from him coming out during the opening segment. So, you know, I was happy with that. I thought it was going to go well. Grado comes out, tells the sound guy, play my music. So it comes out, like, you know, they've come all the way here. They've travelled.
Also,
oh, brilliant! All right, so play my fucking music. So they've come all this way to Bilbao. Let's give him, you know, let's give him the Grado entrance. They clearly want it. It's fantastic. So there it is. When you come on, and dances out, jiggles out, you know, waves to the crowd. Fantastic. Crowds are now leaving at this point, obviously, because they've been told the show is cancelled and they're getting a refund. Crowd is, you know, filing out. Everyone turns around, looks at Grado, and then turns back and just leaves. And he literally, nobody cares. He come backstage. They're like, oh, you finished. He's like, yeah, nobody cares. Absolutely nobody. Like, didn't matter
unsavable.
At all.
Unsavable.
It's like, this is like, it's all over. The Spanish people, they're off. They're going to go for a siesta. It's like, you know, good night. End of days.
Easy. Now, we are touch base on merchandise and everything else. Now, you got Rage t-shirts. What, like, how many designs do you have? Like, 7,
cool.
8, 9?
So, including the t-shirts for individual wrestlers, we're probably up to about, like, 30 designs now.
All right. And they're all available on the site?
All available at ipwukshop.com.
Easy. So, that's
all sizes.
Facebook, just ipwuk.shop.
www.ipwukshop.com.
Easy, and that's linked on the Facebook
yep,
as well?
It is. It's linked on Facebook.
Twitter and everything else?
On the website, and on the Snapchat now, if I do a snap, yep.
Easy, so we're going to end on that note anyway, but everyone, hit up IPW on all social medias except for YouTube, where, of course, it's just Dan IPW. You'll see small clips and segments until you decide to not be tired anymore. Go on and purchase an IPW show that you will not regret, and hopefully get on board and see what the British wrestling scene's all about nonetheless. All right, thanks for having me on board anyway, Dan.
No worries.
Thank you for tuning in, and I'm hoping that was somewhat enjoyable. And if you enjoyed it that much, please do me a favour. Like it, comment, share. Let me know your thoughts. Let me know some feedback on what I can improve on, who you want to listen to. Now, I do have a special competition going. Now, whether you're a professional wrestler looking to get professional boots made so you can stand out and really look like a professional at the end of the day, or you're a fan looking to get your favourite wrestler onto a set of gauntlets so you can dress up like a wrestler at home and show it off to all your cool friends, Mr. Shoe is giving me a $25 gift voucher to give away, so you could either have $25 off a fresh made pair of boots that are custom to your size and liking, or you can get 2 pairs of gauntlets made, including postage, sent out to you nation or worldwide. And all you have to do from there on out is like the poster on Wrestle Radio Australia and then comment away who you'd like to be featured on the Axe Cast containing Josh the Axe Shooter. And now coming up on October 23rd, I will be facing Muhammad Ali Vaez at OCW, that's Outback Championship Wrestling, where the winner of that match will go on to face JXT, Sid Parker, Andy Phoenix, and Adam Brooks in a 5-way elimination match to find out who will be the number one contender for the OCW Championship. and the following night after, I can be seen in Melton Wrestling and making my debut at Warzone Wrestling, tagging with Luke Santamaria. That's RCW, Riot City Wrestling's own Luke Santamaria, as we go for the gold. That's right, we're going to face Enforcer and Dowie James, known as the Lightning Strike Coalition. And I can't wait for that. I mean, Dowie's one of my favourite people of all time, as a wrestler, as a person. He's just someone I have chemistry in the ring with, and I can click whether I'm tagging with him or whether I'm facing him, locking horns with him across the ring from me. And if you can't get enough podcasts, there are great, amazing, quality podcasts out there that are Australian-made. You can check out whether it's Wrestle Radio Australia with Josh Armour hosting a podcast interviewing wrestlers and superstars from across the globe, Muhammad Ali Vaez hosting Healing Out, debuting every Friday, or even over from the West Coast, we have David Storm that presents On the Fringe, which is a great artistic look on professional wrestling, on performing arts. And then we have Paul Sayers all the way on the West Coast in New Zealand with that young podcast, hashtag anything for the cast. Quick shout out to Paul Sayers for being a top bloke, giving me a shout out and sharing my post, and anyone else that shared my post and helped spread the word of the Axe Cast. And until next time, just remember, you can't stop the Axe.
Song and I won't. Shoot the Defence is the opinionated, entertaining football show with serious debates you're looking for. We have a variety of guests, from ex-footballers to journalists, members of parliament to athletes. Every month, former Chelsea, Swansea and Brighton striker Leon Knight weighs in with his opinions on night vision. So tune in on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, shootthedefence.com and the FNX Network, and let Stel, John, Mike and Stuffy give you a free football lesson. Follow us on Twitter @ShootTheDefence.
This is